WTF is Retail, presented by Excellent Zephyr.
All right, welcome back everyone to WTF is Retail. Today we're joined by Noah Warren, the COO of Temple Cycles, and Rita Jenkins, the head of partnerships at Ship Theory. Personally, for myself, as a partnerships guy, I'm keen to get this one rolling. It's our first double whammy, so we get to talk with Rita from Ship Theory, who's one of our partners, and, as always, have the focus on the brand with Noah from Temple Cycles. So I wanted to start a little bit with some context about the brand and your story. We've spoken a bit over lunch already. could you tell us about the starting of the brand itself and then where you came into the story?
Yeah, sure. So the brand itself started with Matt, the solo founder of the business, and he basically started making bikes out of old vintage frames at university. So literally picking up old used bikes, the classic kind of British steel frame, 10 gears, road racing type bike, and basically making conversions of those into nice sort of single speed town bikes or into, you know, sort of usable sort of little touring bikes and things like that. And after a little while, I guess the resource there just kind of started drying up. You know, old bikes are a finite resource. So started looking into developing his own frame and building out his own bike brand. For many, many years, Temple Cycles kind of grew from that tiny little sort of like speck of an idea into something a little bit bigger. And I guess at the time it was kind of more of a sort of custom house. So people were coming in, they were seeing our frame, taking our frame, coming with a sort of list of requirements, and we'd build them up something sort of reasonably custom. I came into the business in about 2019. And basically at that time, it was kind of a transformative point in the business where we were starting to think more about how we actually turn this thing into like a viable brand where people can come, they can, you know, see a product on a website, see it in a shop, and then actually buy it. And, you know, so there's still an element of customization to what we do, but it was definitely a bit more of a static product and something that we could offer to people.
Definitely. So we're sort of heading in the direction of more having your own brand, having a full, complete product rather than maybe the manufacturing piece by piece brand that you were before.
I think what Matt had built up at that point was a really strong brand. I think what we sort of worked on from that point was just really drilling into what the product was, you know, and what people wanted to use the product for.
And we've got the product behind us for the listeners.
Absolutely.
Could you walk us through the product?
On
a side note.
This is actually one of our latest product releases. So this is actually an e-bike, so electric bike. We released this tail end of last year. In the bike industry at the moment, this is like the big growth area. This is something that people are looking at now in terms of like future cities and, you know, active mobility and things like that. This is an option for somebody who lives in a city, wants to get across town to the office, wants to arrive in comfort, they want to not be sweaty when they get there, and XYZ, all of the other little
things. Or lives in Bristol where there's loads of hills.
Yeah, or lives in Bristol where there's
hills. You can't get up those hills, especially Park Street.
So we brought this into the range, and it's been a massive growth thing for us, you know, in terms of what people, you know, the way people are looking at it. It's been really interesting, especially when you go from where we started out, where we were building like enthusiasts, I guess like sort of like baubles in a way, you know, people are coming to us, you can go and buy a bike from Halfords, but people are coming to us to choose their own mudguards, their own handlebars and things like this. This is almost going like back the other way. This is something that's still beautiful and still functional and works really well, but it's much more of a tool for living. It's something that you can use in your life every day.
And this, obviously you were doing, you know, your traditional bikes, you know, what people think, but e-bikes is a different kind of technology, right? Like, did you have to do a lot of research into the market, you know, development to get the right battery? Obviously, you know, you can get batteries relatively cheap nowadays, but they're not good quality.
Yeah.
You know, how was that process for you? Like, imagine that was...
It was a 3-year process.
Really?
Is the best way to, you know, just put it like that.
So painful.
Yeah. And there's loads of options out there. There's loads of different systems, there's loads of different formats and layouts and designs, and there's different ways of thinking about it. And basically the best way at the moment, with the speed of the market developing, is just get out there and test. And it's basically what we've done on all of our products. It's, on one side, it's really, you know, for me, when we're trying to bring a product to market, it's really frustrating. But we've always had like a sort of quite protracted product dev time on all of our products. Mm. We want to come up with the idea, then we want to test it and test it and test it and test it. And then when we're finally happy with something, that's the point when we'll start bringing it to market. So yeah, 3 years, it took a long time and there were a lot of failures. Probably more things that didn't work in this project than when we developed a normal bike. Right. But what we've ended up with is something that's like really successfully, you know, a beautiful bike that's super functional. That you can
and
use
it
every
is
day.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I guess to tie up that first question about how we got to where we are, and it talks about, you know, testing you've mentioned, but do the customers have involvement in that? The reason I ask is obviously you guys have just finished up a second round of funding, if I'm right. So like, what does that look like for our listeners who maybe are looking to go down that route as well? You know, how do you get the funding and what involvement can your customers have in getting the right product that they want at the end of that?
Sorry, I don't understand what you mean. So,
the funding, when you've gone out and got it, where's that come from? How have you gone out and got it?
Yeah.
And is it done through crowdfunding, private investment, and the last part, I guess, is do you have to go to market with bits of your end product on the way, along the way, to make sure you're on the right track?
Yeah. So, in terms of funding, we've been really lucky to have a really engaged audience. Mm-hmm. So that's like people that bought bikes off us in 2014 and 2015, we still hear from now, and they'll come back to us. And the really nice thing about our bikes is generally we try and design them in a fairly modular way. Mm-hmm. So if you came and bought a single speed off us in 2014, you can come back to us now and we can maybe turn it into a 9-speed town bike or 27-speed touring bike or a 22-speed road bike. And there's lots of different things we can do with that. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we've always had this really engaged audience.
Yeah.
So when we did look to fund, we first and foremost went out and spoke to our audience. If you like, our sort of small investors who've all come and bought our product from us.
Exactly.
And that's where a lot of what we raised came from. You know, people who understand the brand, understand the product. Mm-hmm. In terms of developing the product and bringing products to market, we always have people in mind that we engage with, that we will get involved with that cycle. Yeah. Because there is sort of no better way to get things tested than give them to people who you think might break them.
Speaking of your of your customers there, you were talking about how you know how much they appreciate the product and sort of their impact they've had on the business growing.
Yeah.
I was looking at, there was a review somewhere on site and the title was Perfection on Wheels. But on there it was talking about the level of customer support that you give and that sort of personalised touch that you give with the product itself, but then, you know, with your customers. So obviously they're getting to know you as a business and vice versa, and then you're kind of giving them this custom product that they're like, wow, this is amazing, like all round. So
I think that the thing with that is we always reference that idea of, like, you know, in 2014 when Matt was literally sat in his shed at his parents' house and he was building bikes and he was responding to customers and he was ordering parts and you know, doing all of that. And I think the thing that Matt did really well at that point was just, I suppose, at a bit of desperation for orders. He never said no. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's, from a customer service standpoint, not great advice. But we kind of learned that as much of that as we can preserve, you know, like knowing who your customer service representative that you're dealing with is, and knowing that they will be the one that gets back to you when you get back in touch and things like that. I mean, it's going to be the same. There's going to be a bit of continuity there.
Yeah.
That's been really important. We've recently changed the CRM system we're using for our online orders as well. We're using a system called Gorgeous, and that's been like revolutionary for us because that's basically we're now offering, you know, the same service. I'd like to think in terms of the approachability and sort of friendliness that we were when it was Matt sat on his own in desperation trying to secure every person who was interested in his bike.
Why is it always a shed?
Yeah, it's always a shed.
It always starts in a shed.
We've got that same level of sort of friendliness and approachability, but we're now, you know, we're responding to people in a couple of hours.
Yep.
You know, people are expecting to hear back from us several times a day, and to have been able to sort of achieve that for customers is just you know, fantastic.
Yeah, it's so important.
And it really gives people confidence in the product when they know that they can get a response from someone.
And it's part of that experience, I suppose, of like this feels authentic kind of bike, you know, from the local guys down the shed.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can chat to them easily over, you know, customer support. So
yeah.
It adds to that narrative for sure.
Absolutely. And it's all little things, but it's, you know, it's giving people... It's tying it all in. It's giving people responses on social media. Or it's making sure you pick up the phone. And all these things, when you're growing a business, they're all really annoying. They're all little annoying things you have to do. You have to be answering the phone. You have to be on emails. You have to be on social media. What Gorgeous has kind of let us do is, as a separate system, is bring it all together, yeah. Which means that we can maintain all those levels.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I suppose this kind of feeds off what we're talking about here. But how did you guys, or how do you guys, position yourself in the cycle market? Because there's obviously a lot of big players. You've mentioned Halfords and the other bike brands I named, Falcon.
Rafa.
Yeah. Yeah. I've named all the brands I know. So, you know, these big players, like, and there's obviously other independent kind of, you know, custom shops as well. Where do you position yourselves in all that?
So, I guess that... The best way to kind of think about it, our kind of like mission statement, is a bike for life. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of away from a lot of the other bike brands in terms of how we position ourselves. Mm-hmm. Lots of other bike brands, you know, let's talk big names, so let's say like Specialized or Giant or Trek, like the big players.
Falcon.
they work on, let's say, year to 18 month model cycle. So every 12 to 18 months, your bike is effectively, in quotation marks, obsolete. Mm-hmm. And that might just be colours. That might be 10% stiffer. That might be 5% lighter or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But that's happening year on year on year. Now, the products that we try to design, we go out of our way to make sure they're going to be serviceable going forward. Make sure that what we're sort of speccing bikes with is not weird, proprietary, odd things that you can't buy in any bike shop anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, sort of making a product that is inherently sustainable. Something that when we're looking at the model, the lifespan of our product, we're looking at 20, 30, 40, 50 years that we expect a frame to be in service for. And that's exactly why we offer a lifetime warranty on all of our steel frames. Wow. The idea is that you'll buy it and, you know, maybe it won't be your single speed, like city bike forever, but potentially it will be for a bit, and then it'll have another lifetime, maybe with 9 gears and a child seat on the back. Maybe it'll have another lifetime as a touring bike, which will take you across Europe, through the Pyrenees.
One day.
If you're offering to give me a bike for free, I will document this journey for you, don't worry.
but that's the thing, it's about having a journey and you know, that it's a product, it's a bike that you won't need to replace to sort of grow through your lifetime. And that, I guess that's, you know, into that sustainability thing, you know, something you'll keep forever.
Okay, that's cool. And then, obviously you guys have been growing relatively quick. We talked about it a bit over dinner. We've already mentioned we had dinner together before.
It was lunch.
I'm from the north and we call it dinner. Tea is tea. But anyway, we won't go into that. So, like, what made you identify a need for Ship Theory? Obviously, Rita's on the podcast from Ship Theory. Mm-hmm. So, like, what was that moment where you're like, all right, we need, like, some help with this?
So, I mean, shipping for us has always been like a pain point. We ship really big, really light boxes, which is basically, for any shipping carrier, their worst nightmare. Mm-hmm. So we've always had problems. When we were smaller, the way that we solved that was literally just throwing bodies at it. So just ship with more, you know, if we've got more bikes we need to ship, get more people tapping things into TNT, we were using, and just more people tapping in more things into TNT until eventually it gets unsustainable.
I mean, one of the things Dexter was saying was about, because actually, funnily enough, I was the, so when I started at Ship Theory, I was
Yeah, you did the onboarding.
Exactly,
I think
yeah.
We had the first conversation.
We did. Yeah, we did, so a few years ago. And then I helped you guys set everything up with the shipping, so just made sure you were kind of going with the right carriers, dependent on your weight and size of boxes. But I remember it being a sort of, a little bit complex in the sense that you had, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have different products that have to go with express services if they're under a certain weight.
Yeah.
And then if a product's going with another product, it needs to go with another service.
Yeah.
And then because you're doing the international shipping as well, there's a lot around that to ensure that you're choosing the right service and the right carrier. Actually, you have multiple carriers. So I can see why doing it without an automated service before was super stressful. I think Dexter said, we have horrendous spreadsheets was one of his points. So it was nice to sort of jump in and help out with that.
Yeah, and I think that was the other thing, the international was the big one.
Mm.
Because post January 21.
You're not going to say the word here.
I won't dare.
Shall not be named.
Post January 21. Our sort of paperwork and the time it was taking to ship just went from, you know, let's say we were taking an hour a day, it was four. And it was slow. Mm-hmm. And also, as everyone well knows at that time, none of the systems really worked. You know, you'd kind of just chuck things in boxes and then eventually they'd either land where you've sent them or they'd land back at your door and you'd send them again.
Yeah, we had to, like, with when that all happened, that thing.
The C word.
When it all happened, we had to adapt really quickly as well.
Yeah.
Because obviously with all of the carrier integrations we've got, like over 90 or something, we had to learn exactly what it was that was required by each carrier to be able to cross-border ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were learning as we go, but we also had to do it very fast for the retailers that required it so quickly. Basically, same from our side.
Yeah.
We were all like, what is going on? We need to find out what we need from these carriers.
Yeah.
But what has been refreshing is seeing you guys and all of our other retailers actually automate that whole process. And now, really, you only need, like, your, I believe with your ones specifically, you need to sometimes stick a CN22 on the outside of the box, or the commercial invoice is electronic in some cases, which is crazy. Because it's gone from, like you said, 4 hours a day to now, I think, again, speaking of Dexter, 1 hour a day or something?
Yeah, like
just
max,
by automating it.
Yeah, just like max it's an hour.
Crazy.
And also, like, it handle, you know, the fact that we're talking then about everything. So I'm talking like 4 hours to ship bikes, but this is like an hour to do all accessories, all everything, and bikes out the door, which is just madness. You know, that's just such a saving for us.
How much is going out the door every day? Like, what sort of quantities are we talking shipping?
It varies very much
yeah.
from like season to season. But, you know, if we're really busy, we're shipping, you know, 100 bikes a week.
Well,
plus accessories orders.
Cool.
If we're quieter, it's a lot less.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Brilliant. So, Rita, you mentioned a couple of challenges that you guys faced already there. One being the size of what you're shipping. That's not your traditional potential retailer. It might be something smaller typically. And also the thing that shall not be named. But outside of that, what other...
There might be someone that just doesn't know what
we're talking about.
Just comment, are we on the same page of what this is?
Do all the listeners get it? If you know what we're talking about, send us an email and say the word. But we won't
just
be saying
the word.
It. Yeah. We won't be saying it. What other challenges were there specifically with Temple Cycles that you guys found, or maybe you had to adapt your product to service that? What challenges did you have to find?
Yeah, of course. I mean, like you said, comparing it to like the average kind of clothing retailer, it's very different because of the different types of products that these guys have. And like we've talked about a number of times now, the size of them and the weight of them, right? So when you're setting up Ship Theory with shipping rules to automate things, because that's what you want to do. You don't want to have to press any buttons. You want your shipping label to come out. You want it to go through customs and you want your customers to be happy, right? to be able to do that, you just have to do it through the shipping rules. And because our shipping rules engine is so extensive, we can basically, it doesn't matter what the retailer's shipping. They can be shipping just, you know, a t-shirt in a letter if they wanted to. And because we guide them through that process and actually understand how the retailer's operating, what it is that they're shipping, where they're shipping it from. They might have three packing stations, two picking stations, an office 3 miles down the road, you know, however they want to do it, we can slot into it. And it's because of the flexibility of those shipping rules. So with Temple Cycles, obviously their main thing, like I said, was their products. So you can do it based on the product SKUs. So it might say because it's a certain weight, it has to go with this service. And they can get really complex and deep, but we help these guys like guide them through all of the steps basically and make sure that it is what they want to happen. And you can pretty much do anything with the rules that needs to be done. I think another thing as well with your account, if I remember, I think you still use it, is the integrated labels, which basically allows a retailer to print out a label, but then a product list as well.
Yes.
Alongside that, so it helps you pick the items.
Yeah.
It just means that you're not having to match up the label with the piece of paper and it's like getting all clunky. And again, just leaving a lot of room for mistakes and errors, and it's also very boring. one of our mottos is really getting rid of that sort of boring, laborious, repetitive tasks that no one should have to spend their time doing that, like matching up bits of paper or typing in someone's name or address, you know. We want to make life easier for you. So going through all of that process with them, I think we sped it up a bit.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And I suppose, like, regardless of it's boring, right, you're going to have to pay someone to do that. And that's...
100%. And this is what we found like over the years is a retailer can, you know, they'll have someone or two people, three people, however many in their warehouse team manually typing things in, and they're going to make mistakes, right? And they're also spending 7 hours a day doing this task that is just brain numbing. Get them doing something else, automate the process and repurpose your staff to get them to do something that's more valuable for your business, and it's going to allow you to scale faster. And so many retailers we have done that, and they're like, thank you so much. I've started using Dave from the warehouse, he's now painting our bikes.
Yeah.
You guys, but
I think there's like two sides of it as well, because when it's difficult to do like that, then it's also people are just automatically put off by it, just like a human nature thing. If you know you've got to ship, you know, for us it might be our accessories orders, if we know we've got to ship our accessories orders, and the person who does it knows they've got to spend 2 hours typing in addresses and copy and pasting and making things work, they don't want to do it.
No way.
So you don't get the productivity even out of that person. So regardless of how much time it costs you, like, nobody is motivated to do it.
Exactly. And you will motivate workers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, there's no motivation to do it, and that has a knock-on effect to the service you're providing.
Yeah.
And, for us, certainly, the first thing people buy might not necessarily be a bike. Maybe they'll come to us and they'll buy a water bottle, they'll buy a bottle cage or something small. And if the service is right there, then come back and maybe they're going to come back and buy a bike from us. But making sure that it's easy for your staff to do things like that, the knock-on effect in terms of the lifetime value of that customer is, like, massive.
Mm. Yeah. One thing, I know we're talking about us a little bit, like, we're really kind of focused on automation, aren't we, this year and coming up years, for that exact reason, like, it's not just from a shipping perspective, but if you can automate all the processes in your business, it's just even more time you're saving, more motivated workers and all these kind of things. So I think just across the retail technology world, I think that's just a big focus for those of these tech companies at the minute, helping retailers. And we've seen a lot of retail brands come into us talking about, what can we automate, how can we do it?
Integration and automation.
Yeah, they're the ones. So I wrote quite a long question here, I'm not going to lie. But, So I actually opened up with, you guys are a bit of a throwback. It was quite, quite narrative of me. It's quite good. So you guys are a bit of a throwback, giving recognition to the once thriving British cycle manufacturing industry. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I think it said something along that on your website. And so I'd love to hear about your manufacturing kind of process and, where are you sourcing your materials from? How's that worked out for you? I know we talked about on the walk up here a bit, you said there was a big problem during COVID getting materials, but like, how's that all working?
You said it. It's all right. Continue your question. It's long enough already.
I'm sorry, guys. But yeah, kind of manufacturing. How's that going?
Yeah. So the actual sort of like making the manufacturing for us is quite an important tenet of what we do, because it allows us to keep control of the final product that we produce. It allows us to have a lot more control over exactly how everything looks as it leaves. You know, it's only small things, but it's things like we have really tight specs for grip angle. We've got really tight specs for brake lever angle. And the reason for all of that is, again, mentioned it over lunch, it's all about touch points. You know, when you're going to get involved with a bike, you're going to buy a product like that, you want to be connected with it, like feel with it. And manufacturing ourselves allows us to keep such better control over that, those little things, the things like touch points and the little details. Mm-hmm. Is it like the most efficient way of working? Well, I guess there's two ways of looking at it. Number one, we have a shorter supply chain. So over COVID, when we had 3-year lead times on some of our products, it allowed us to be a lot more agile in, you know, changing up bill of materials, things like that. You know, can't get one product from somewhere, get it from somewhere else. And keeping the production line moving, basically, keeping the wheels turning in manufacturing. The bad side of it, of course, is you need to keep those wheels turning all the time. So we have to keep busy, and we have to find ways to keep doing that as well. So there's sort of, you know, pros and cons of doing it yourself. But personally, the idea of bringing more stuff back in, I guess it goes back to the start of your question, the once thriving UK bike industry. You know, the more stuff we can be doing here, the more stuff we can be doing in the UK, I think is great for us.
Yeah. I'm glad you're on board about the thriving British. I don't know if I got that off your website. It just came to me in a moment of inspiration.
But it's a really interesting point. So, like, you know, it's really not that long ago, you know, we're talking like 40, 50 years, that the majority of the bikes that you would see on the street in the UK would have been made here from the ground up.
Yeah.
And the reality is now, the majority, like, it's a tiny minority that are. Mm. And the little minority that are quite artisan, generally.
Right.
Now, what we do at the moment, in terms of our supply chain, it's a global supply chain. We have things coming in from all over the world. We'd love to be able to shorten that, and over the course of the next maybe 5 or 10 years, we would love to be bringing more of that stuff back in-house, stuff that we can be doing here. But what we just try and do at the moment is like a nice little kind of halfway house of trying to bring as much as we can, for the moment, back in to try and support, you know, UK manufacturing, I guess.
Nice, yeah. And I saw that you guys have got a London shop now.
Yeah.
So what was the idea on that? Is it because city cycling is obviously really big and it's going to continue to grow?
Yeah.
Was that the idea, or?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. But, you know, we have the shop in London. We've also got a showroom space at our workshop in Bristol. Mm. We've got a network of partner stores throughout Europe. And the idea is that, you know, we're under no illusions of these, like, buying something like a bike, especially one that we're saying to you is buy this bike and have it for life. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a considered purchase. If you're going to be stuck with it for 40 years, then you want to be able to get up and really get to know it. Mm. You also want to be able to see, one thing that I guess is difficult to portray online is, you know, we've spent a long time over things like these grips and making sure these grips feel the way we want them to. They're the right shape, the right size, XYZ.
The touch points you were talking about.
Touch points, exactly. Mm. We've spent a lot of time agonising over that. Mm. You can't necessarily portray that on a website. Mm. So giving people access to actually come and see the product, put their hands on it, know more intimately what the quality of it is, is really beneficial to people sort of, I guess, backing your brand.
Yeah.
For sure. And, you know, we're talking about now bricks and mortar. I don't want to go too deep, or we can go too deep into, you know, where's that going? That's a big debate at the moment, obviously. Bricks and mortar, is it on the rise, or do we just have to do it differently? But tech-wise, and maybe you lean on, you know, ship theory for this a little bit, does that raise another set of challenges? You know, finding a POS system that works for you guys, integrating your tech stack, like, yeah. Does that change things?
Yeah, I mean, the whole discussion around what is going on with retail right now is really interesting, because there's some people I can think of who are doing a really fantastic job, and it doesn't seem like what they're doing is revolutionary. Mm-hmm. It's just what you always imagine retail would be. You know, it's the people who are just saying, you know, when you go into a clothing shop, is that the right size? Mm-hmm. Can I help you with anything? Mm-hmm. Those are the things that I think are really missing mm-hmm. from retail at the moment. It's the added value. Mm-hmm. If you're just going to walk into a shop and you could buy the same t-shirt online for £20 less, then, and you're getting no service, then why would you pay for somebody to rent a shop?
Yeah.
It kind of makes no sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the whole thing of integrating and actually making, there's an element of having to try and make everything you have available online available through your store. You know, when we start looking at the number of bikes we sell, something like 150 SKUs in colours and sizes and things like that.
Yep.
You just can't have all of those things in your store.
Yeah, of course.
So having something that integrates properly and allows you to feed back and sell somebody something almost remotely mm-hmm. Is really important. Mm-hmm. So all of those integrations are really key.
Yeah, like just touching on that, I've seen through a lot of our retailers, you talked about kind of building a tech stack that mm-hmm. works for them. I think it's it's the way that everyone's moving forward now. You mentioned Gorgeous earlier.
Yeah.
You know, having different softwares that actually do their job and do it really well and all talk to each other to achieve whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. So obviously, you are really focused on the customer journey and ensuring there's a seamless flow of communication or delivery, whatever it is. It's ensuring that you've got the right bits of software that are all speaking to each other seamlessly so that the customer who is your priority is getting that, you know, premium service at the end of the day. And your workers are finding it easy to deliver that service because all the software is working as it should be.
Absolutely.
So important. There's so much stuff out there as well now. Like, it's how it's going, right?
This is the thing, is like, because there's so much out there, it's easy to get blinded by the light of retail technology. But, you know, like, picking the right stuff for you is so important. You know, picking the right solutions, the right things you need that can kind of plug together to make, you know, essentially make all your business operations as smooth as possible.
Mm.
That's what you want to be able to do, and have it so you can scale it up. You know, you don't want to be doing all this work, paying all this money, and then having to change it 4 years down the line. It's just a pain.
And it's funny you mentioned it. So actually, one of the reasons that we ended up actually picking Ship Theory over other options that were sort of out there was that there was multiple ways that it could work for us.
Mm.
So there's a Shopify integration,
mm-hmm.
there's an Unleashed integration.
Yep.
And we knew that we needed this product to work. We knew that our product was a bit awkward in terms of the way that we sell things, that there was little elements there. And we were able to basically play around with either integrating through Shopify or integrating through Unleashed to make it work for our business, which I think was really, really helpful. And what you're saying about having, you know, the right products and integrating that tech stack, that just having that available and having options on the table was great.
Mm. Yeah. It's sort of how we built out Ship Theory, really, is by being very customer focused, and customer is king to us. So we've listened to what the demand is in the market for the integrations on the sales channel side. So what marketplaces are needed, what integrations, you know, Shopify, WooCommerce, Amazon, you know, all the big players. And then the carriers, which carriers are people needing? Mm-hmm. So it's allowed a lot of retailers, especially within the UK logistics, you know, market, but also now over the EU, over North America, people are coming to us going, oh wow, you've got all the integrations. Like, this is fine. This is what I need. Like, how do you do it? It's like, just put your details in, press test connection, it's connected. Mm. It's like, what?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's about listening to your customer. That's the bottom line, is learning what it is that they need, who you're trying to target, and then building out whatever it is you're trying to build from there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, perfect. So we're already talking, I guess, about overseas shipping and stuff like that. And that's obviously where Ship Theory is so good. But how many countries are you shipping to at Temple Cycles?
We ship to all of the EU We ship to Switzerland, Scandinavia. We ship a little bit to the US, a little bit into Asia. So we've got some pretty global reach, really, in terms of where we're shipping.
Is that sort of a growth area that you want to expand on?
Definitely. I mean, our plans for the next sort of 12 to 18 months is opening up more of a base in EU. Mm-hmm. It'll probably be somewhere in Germany.
Okay.
And we'll probably look to build out the same kind of systems for our warehouse there in terms of dispatching things using ship theory again. Just to make, you know, we're used to the system, we know it works, so it's something we know we can rely on elsewhere too.
Yeah.
You don't fancy Barcelona?
So all about EU shipping zones now. I think we start talking about that, then we're just going to really lose the audience.
That kind of works.
But yeah, you'll be in EU shipping zone 3, which won't work for shipping zones.
So my kind of final question I had here, you kind of said something there about expanding to EU as it might get a physical presence there. Any other plans in the future? New bikes, new products. Give me the juicy goss.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're looking to expand our sort of acoustic bikes. So we've got a road frame coming out, so like a traditional road bike. Similar kind of vein to everything else we do, sort of harking back to what would be like a sort of a clubman bike. Mm-hmm. Old club cyclists would have one bike that they would use for touring, racing, time trials, club runs, you know.
A bit of a throwback.
It has space for mud guards, so you can ride all winter to work. Nice. You take them off in the summer. So we've got our own modern version of that coming out. Steel frame, steel fork, disc brakes, you know, sort of a modern version of that. We've got more options coming on the electric side. So hopefully more of a sort of like city type of runaround, maybe looking towards cargo and things like that. The future's sort of exciting. There's lots of, you know, right now in the cycling industry, there's so much to play for. And, you know, for us, it's just a really exciting time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I just wanted to ask you, how many miles can you get on this battery?
Mm. Well, it really depends on how you ride it and how heavy you are. But 100 kilometres is not out of question.
Okay. And how long does it take to charge the battery?
Full charge is like 6 to 8 hours, I think.
Nice.
So like it's like you could definitely do like a decent commute on it.
Mm. And be to charging London? Overnight. Bristol to London?
Yeah, if you switch the power off.
Just cycle there. Yeah.
Are you thinking about your Pyrenees trip?
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe an electric one. Send over an electric one.
I think one more thing that might be really interesting while we're talking about the battery is on the way over here you were talking about, you know, how it reacts to more push versus less push, the torque, like it's so different to other models obviously.
Yeah, so it's a system, the system we use on this is like a torque sensing system. So basically this is something that's reasonably common with this type of mid-drive motor. But the idea is that basically the more that you push the pedals, the more assist it's going to give you. So it's a lot more dynamic. It's not like that sort of traditional kind of on-off switch that you get with an e-bike that people might have tried in the last 10 years.
I've ridden something like that. That's why
Exactly. Yeah. The kind of thing you jump on like a hire bike or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of you pedal and it just kicks in. So this is a lot smoother and it feels a lot more like riding a traditional bike. The difference is getting up hills is much easier. That's it. And you don't necessarily arrive sweaty, which is key.
Perfect for the Pyrenees.
I'd imagine if you're riding it up for, you know, the Pyrenees, then you probably are going to get sweaty doing
it. You won't look that glamorous.
Riding it up a col, I think you're probably going to need it. There's only so much the motor can do, right?
Nice. So the final thing we like to ask guests on the show is for both of you guys. What is your favourite retail brand at the moment? It could be anything.
I have two. Can I say two?
No, that's not the one. Yeah. Yeah.
Say two, but pick one.
Temple Cycles. No, so I My two favourite at the moment. So one's a donut food supplier. Do you know Donut Time?
Yeah.
You may have seen them. They're very hot on the... We were talking about Instagram ads earlier. They're very hot on their marketing there. It does bits. Mm-hmm. So they're basically sort of huge custom donuts that you can get every flavour under the sun. And then they'll customise it based on the season. And basically the experience you have when you get this box that's covered in all these graphics, you open up these pack of donuts and they're incredible. Another level. I mean, I have one and I'm like, right, I'm done now. But it's part of the experience, you know, everyone gets involved. And when you actually order them as well, you get loads of emails saying like, oh, you know, well done, you've done it. So yeah, that's a great experience as a consumer. My second one is a bit more of a cliche, and it's Apple.
I am an Apple sucker.
I have Apple everything. I just love the experience that you have as a consumer going into the store. I mean, the like simplistic form of everything, how all of the products are out. Everything's just easy, you know, accessible, simple, refreshing. It's an incredible experience. And then my favorite thing, and I looked into this, it was like psychology. I think a load of psychologists actually designed the box of an iPhone to open in a certain way. So speaking about push and pull, like friction. So you know when you open, I don't know how many of you have done this. I'm going to get one out.
We have Androids.
Yeah, when you open an iPhone box, there's a bit of friction against it. And it's so that it pauses for the just about a right amount of time before you see the product. Wow. So that when it's revealed to you, you're like, oh, it's really deep.
It creates a build-up.
Yeah, Apple, wow. Apple
little
are deep.
Little fanfare.
Honestly, yeah. It's incredible. I'm a sucker for it.
Whoever came with that idea is a genius.
I know. Yeah. It's deep. And also, it's
or
going
a
psycho.
Back... make it win. Yeah.
And also, going back to the SKU thing, they actually are one of the companies that have the least amount of SKUs, and that's so that their workers are able to actually, you know, give this seamless level of service because they're not getting confused by all the SKUs that are there. And then it's easy for the consumer to, you know, pick between certain products. So they get rid of things and... Pretty cool.
So, which one is it? Which one's your favourite?
Oh, it depends what mood I'm in. Donuts or apple products?
The only two things.
Depends on how close to lunchtime it is, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
For me, it's a smaller brand. There's a brand actually based out of Cheltenham where I live called the Union Project, a clothing store. They also sell online. And I just really feel like they have retail nailed. It's like an experience to go in there. It's enjoyable to buy products from them. Mm-hmm. Everyone, it's like what I spoke about earlier, it's basics. You walk in and somebody says hello. Like you pick something up and somebody helps you to the changing room. You know, it's all of those key things that just make, that gives you a reason to go to that shop rather than go and buy something online.
And go back to it as well.
They've been growing a lot online recently. You can buy from online. And the experience is as seamless. Mm. You know, you can order something online from their website and pick it up in store same day. Mm. And, you know, for a sort of smallish business working out of a small town in the southwest, they just got it absolutely nailed. And I look at bigger clothing brands and think they could learn so much from these guys
for sure.
And the service they're offering.
Yeah, awesome.
Perfect. So I guess wrapping up, thanks for joining us.
Cheers.
You know, coming in here, bringing the bike. You know, having food us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, if people will start for you, know, like if people want to find out more about the bikes, where can they go if they're looking for these shiny, beautiful objects?
Yeah, well, to come and have a look for our bikes, it's templecycles.com.
Very simple.
Absolutely. Keep it simple.
Rita?
Same again. Well, where they can find Ship Theory bikes. Or...
Shiny Ship Theory.
We talk co-branding.
Oh, yeah. Next up. That's one of the releases this year.
That's it, yeah.
ShipTheory.com. You can either give us a call or drop us an email. So easy to reach always.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Pleasure.
Thanks so much.
WTF is Retail, presented by Excellent Zephyr.